Welcome back. 16 minutes past 8 o'clock. Free the weed is what a WhatsApp says. As my good friend Russ Warren says, Lati dacha gerukvot. But isn't weed sort of free already if you're growing it by yourself at your home, using it for your own consumption? Yes, it's touch and go there, and we know that some police aren't too kind to people who puff, but if you want to give us a call, do you feel that you are free to practice your hobby of freeing the weed a little bit more liberally? Let me know. 021-446-0567. Now, the Human Science Research Council has released its second report on how the lockdown has affected South Africans and people who live in South Africa. The council conducted a survey on a number of issues related to the lockdown, such as contact with people during the lockdown, the perception of risk of people living here, the access to food and chronic medication, and of course find the financial impact of the lockdown, amongst others. Tonight we speak to Dr. Zahir Parker, Chief Researcher at the Center for Science, Technology and Innovation at the HSRC. Dr. Zahir, thanks so much for joining us. How are you doing this Freedom Day?
Good evening, Lester. Thank you for having us, and happy Freedom Day to all your listeners.
Now, I remember the survey coming out. It was a web-based survey that you had to punch through a certain selection on your phone, and that went straight into the HSRC. Just how many people responded to that?
Across the survey waves over the last 3 weeks, we've had quite a phenomenal response. We've touched base with over 300,000 South Africans across the various waves of the survey. And it's been a phenomenal response, and we've been welcomed by many, many South Africans over the last 3 weeks who've willingly provided their views, their input, and the limited demographic information. And we're extremely thankful to all the participants that have informed us. Very, very important and ongoing series of work within the HSRC.
Now, South Africa as a country, its health systems and even its people have been for a long time being familiar, particularly with infectious communicable diseases. Almost every one of us knows someone living with HIV/AIDS. Many of us know people who have at some point in their lives had TB. So in terms of that, it shows that we are quite resilient to particular changes in our health and our health systems. But what has that experience of being quite familiar with infectious diseases like HIV, TB, what has that told us about how South Africans are responding to COVID-19?
Lester, I mean, I think the important thing to note there is South Africa is a very resilient population. We've lived through many, many lifetimes in the last a number of years since the end of apartheid. And I think as a country and as a population, we've really learned to deal with changing climates and changing environments, quite literally and figuratively, changing political landscapes quite quickly. When the drought struck Cape Town in late 2016, we had a similar behavioral change regime that had to be put in place to ensure people were able to respond adequately to the drought, as in there was nothing we could do in terms of changing weather patterns, but we definitely could change our behavior. And similarly, when it comes to dealing with issues surrounding personal health, community health, public health, and particularly in light of COVID-19, this has to be tapped into this tremendous appetite for trying to advance human behavior and trying to understand how we can best evolve South African society to deal within what has become a new world, essentially, since the advent of COVID-19, has become something that we've really been looking into and trying to understand in a far more detailed way over the last few weeks and months.
So if I were to think of South Africans, I would consider them, I would consider us, let me include myself in the sample, I would consider us a very stubborn bunch. And when I heard that that lockdown was now going to go into levels, with level 5 being the most restrictive, level 1 being very, very open, I thought that South Africans aren't going to adhere to levels. It's either open or close, and South Africans just won't care. What does this survey tell us about South Africans and paying attention to the rules, ensuring that we are adhering to the regulations, even though many of us are pretty much fed up with being indoors for the last, what, almost 5 weeks?
I think South Africans have been fed up for a very long time in this country. You know, politically, economically, it's been a challenging time over the last few years. But what we have found in the series of surveys that we've done so far is that South Africans have been quite compliant. There have been spaces and regions across the country where enforcement of lockdown regulations has become problematic. But that's not particularly a point of adherence or lack of adherence, but really as a result of the dire social circumstances that people live in. Our survey tells us that 25% of people within rural and informal settlements do not have enough money to buy food. We find half of people are not able to access a reliable source of stable food products across the 3 weeks that three or 4 weeks that we've so far been in the situation of lockdown. So what we find is that there's a high degree of wanting to comply. We just find that particularly in under-resourced communities, in high-density communities, where the struggle for survival really becomes a day-to-day issue, that is where we're finding that people have to go outside, where we still find some sorts of illicit activity continuing despite lockdown. And really, you know, in a situation where you've got 9 in 10 people sharing a 3 or 2 bedroom home, it becomes impossible to keep people indoors. And this is a reality of the really, really stark inequality that exists in this country. And our president spoke about this morning in the address he gave.
Sahir, I want you to just move around a little bit. You're coming and fading in and out with your cell phone signal. It's a really important conversation that I want to have with you. Just gleaming through some of the research. One of the big concerns is that if that people deem themselves to be a low risk, that they're not susceptible to being in a spaces where they could contract this disease. What are we finding there? Do people, while we are taking this seriously and we are staying at home, do people still feel that this is something that may not affect them?
For the most part, 46% of our respondents provided a low risk perception with regards to COVID-19, and 32% thought they were at a moderate risk of contracting COVID-19. And this doesn't bode particularly well when we begin to talk about a South Africa that lifts lockdown or eases lockdown regulations. The last few weeks have been incredibly difficult for many, many people in South Africa, not just from an economic point of view and a social, psychological point of view. But the real challenge for us as a country is coming after the 1st of May, as we begin to hopefully ease and lift lockdown regulations, and we start seeing more people interacting, more people moving around, businesses starting to open and the roads getting busier. We are going to notice that the highly infectious nature of COVID-19 is going to begin to truly manifest in South Africa. We have not seen what this virus can do yet, as we've seen in certain other countries like the USA and Italy, for example. We have spent this time preparing our hospitals, preparing our frontline medical staff, ensuring that our population is educated, aware, and ensuring a high degree of health literacy when it comes to preventative measures. And we're going to see, following the easing of lockdown regulations, hopefully on the 1st of May, if those have become useful and implementable and successful initiatives, as we've seen in the research. You know, what we find is that preventative behavior has become our greatest asset and must be intensified as we move into this next phase of the epidemic, where it shifts from a purely biomedical response now to becoming a more sociological response, where we have to gather all the people of South Africa and we need to inform them and take responsibility for our own behavior so that we protect each other. In the absence of a vaccine, herd immunity becomes the only protection we have, but it takes a long time to build up. So social distancing and more so physical distancing becomes critical towards ensuring that we are able to defeat the bend of the curve and bring it lower and come to the back end of it, so that we are able to open up our country and really become the economically and socially productive again.
Dr. Zahir Parker is the chief researcher at the Center for Science, Technology and Innovation at the Human Sciences Research Council. We're talking about a survey that was released yesterday looking at South Africans' attitude towards this ongoing lockdown. Now, Zahir, just in a short while, we're going to be speaking to Mushfika Buerto, who's going to give us some insight into the effects of the lockdown on middle-income families. And there's a bit here that quite interests me and that ties into this conversation that we're going to have. 62.7% of people who responded say that they feel that the lockdown will make life, will make it difficult for them to pay bills. 60.3% says that it's making it difficult to make them earn an income, that it's affecting them feeding their family, and that it's also making it difficult for them to find a job. There are some real concerns here, bread and butter issues, quite literally, of people uncertain about the economic future of where they see themselves, not only now, but in the few weeks as this lockdown, in whichever phase or form it takes, continues.
I think, well, what we're going to find here is that the impact of COVID-19, of the lockdown regulations and the limitations on commerce, particularly employment, on the other hand, but also productivity in general, will show between 45 and 63% of people reported that, you know, the lockdown will make it difficult to ensure that they are able to make their ends meet. 26% of people reported that they had no money for food during this time. And these are critical issues. And the package that government has announced goes a long way to alleviating some of those concerns. And it does come with its own set of issues in terms of accessibility and the time it takes to get people, in terms of access to UIF payments. But we've also seen a tremendous response, particularly in Cape Town, but around the country, from civil societies, from faith-based communities, from NGOs, responding to the dire need of people to gain access to food, to get access to positive behavioral change interventions, and to ensure that even in the most dire of situations, people are able to bridge what is effectively a gap in the income stream. The impact, as you will hear later, no doubt, in your program, doesn't only affect those at the lower end of the scale, but also the middle class quite significantly. People that live from salary to salary have nowhere to go, you know, during this time. And I think what we find is that the interventions by both public and private initiatives, by individuals and social relief organizations, has really helped to cement the culture of Ubuntu in South Africa, and share what we have during these very, very difficult times to help people cover those gaps and to make a way that they can look forward with a little bit more positivity during this very, very difficult time.
As I just go through this report in front of me, I'm picking up things that I may have missed during my read earlier. But I'm quite interested on this result, that 74.8% of people say that they've had absolutely no involvement with SAPS or law enforcement over the last 5 weeks. This either means they've been very, very good, stayed indoors and have absolutely not seen one police officer, or they've been only targeted police interventions in certain parts of the city. I must say, for the last 5 weeks, I drive with my permit to drive at night and move about. I drive that on my front seat, along with my press card in my wallet that I keep in my pocket. And we were talking and we were discussing the studio between my two producers, have you ever been stopped? And none of us have actually been stopped by police. So does this mean that there's only targeted police intervention in certain areas, that where we're seeing on the news media cameras following them, so we think that there is a sort of omnipresent police presence?
Lester, I think that this result, firstly, we must say it's a national result. It doesn't only reflect the experiences of Cape Townians, but all of South Africa. The data was weighted, so there's a good representation of formal and informal residents here, from the city all the way down to deep rural and tribal areas. The fact that 74% of people did not encounter law enforcement or had experiences with law enforcement is a very positive outcome, because what it says is that the lockdown orders were adhered to by and large. Mm. The next biggest factor here is, we must remember that I've also had to move around as a result of this work that we're doing to my office and back home. And on that note, I encountered police every single day on the M5. You're fortunate in that you didn't, but I must be honest, my experiences with them have been extremely positive. Extremely positive. Never before has my interactions with law enforcement in this country been this positive. The people that have been treated badly, have been treated in a rough or rude manner, the majority of them had, you know, encountered law enforcement outside of their homes in contravention of lockdown regulations. And obviously, the sentiment expressed then would be completely different to your and my experience. Mm-hmm. However, I would not venture to answer your question directly about whether there was selective mm-hmm. presence of law enforcement in particular areas, simply because our survey did not cover that, and I don't have the empirical evidence to back that up. But from anecdotal or observational experiences of my own, it seems to me that there is a higher degree of law enforcement at high traffic areas and high density, population density areas, rather than lower density areas.
So, Zahir, what happens with this information? Where does it go to? It's quite interesting, paging through the thoughts of other South Africans, but what do you do with this information, and how does this affect, you know, the policy making in our response to COVID-19 going forward?
Yeah, COVID-19 really has changed the world. It's one of those moments like September the 11th, 2001, that changed air travel going forward, and COVID-19 will change everything moving forward. We will live under a type of risk-adjusted alert level for the next couple of months, until we at least get a vaccine and vaccinate enough people in terms of COVID-19. The information we collect feeds directly via the Department of Science and Innovation, as well as the Department of Health, to the National Command Council, and it feeds into the risk-adjusted strategy that will be adopted moving forward after the 1st of May. As we shift to a state of ease regulation, and greater interaction and greater social interactions across the population and across the country, we're going to find that a public health response and public health interventions that look at behavior change from a sociological point of view more than a biomedical point of view becomes critical. So this type of information in terms of what people experience during lockdown, adherence to lockdown regulations, involvement in illicit trade such as cigarette and alcohol under these regulations becomes very important to try and understand how people move. We're doing a specialized survey looking at health workers and frontline critical healthcare workers, which can also be found at our website, hsrc.ac.za. And then we're launching at the end of this week a survey focusing specifically on younger people below the age of 39, trying to understand their particular behaviors, their particular intentions for movement and action following the easing of lockdown regulations, as well as the risk perceptions that people have moving back into the workplace and back into limited social contact points, which is really creating virological contact points where we can spread the virus and create a second wave. So there's really a great deal of emphasis on collecting as much information as we can to complement the biomedical efforts that have been undertaken by DOH and the NCC, so that we can really develop a comprehensive picture about how to deal with this. You know, the most recent experience we have from a global epidemic is from 1918, almost more than 100 years ago. What we found then is that in the U.S., nearly 600,000 people died of the Spanish flu. South Africa was not immune to that. We were affected by it as well. But what we are finding is that simply because of the fact that we had a little bit more lead time, but also because we took a consultative approach, we consulted the science first above anything else, then we looked at the economic impact, but we also took into account the sociological impact. So that coordinated effort from the very, very top, from the president all the way through the NCC and the various structures that lead in to the HSRC, we have found this integrated approach has really paid dividends 3 or 4 weeks down the line, where the coordinated response from both a biomedical point of view, a human and social point of view, and an epidemiological point of view has been tied together in a way such that we are better able to respond, to formulate policies to the tune of 500 billion rand, and to make sure that people have what they need to get by. And we will get by. We will see the other side of this. It's really just trying to take responsibility for ourselves and make sure that everyone in this country is aware of the risks that we pose over the next few months so that we can shape what that country looks like on the other side.
Dr. Zahir Parker there is a chief research specialist at the Research Impact Center at the HSRC. Thanks so much for joining us.